That's did you see the bloke on the drums there? I thought that was Dan Ford a few years ago. Do you remember when he had long hair? And did you see the bloke who was the lead singer there? I thought that was me. I used to have hair once, and that's how I looked, and just as cool. That's kind of to help any of you dads who are here, kind of bring your dad night. That's our generation, isn't it? That's back. Does anyone remember that song when it came out? Yeah, there we go. It's Soup Dragon, and I think it hit number 5 or something like that. It was quite a popular song, and it was kind of it was really really cool. Does anyone know? Someone will give you something because I ain't got anything. Someone will give you something if you can remember who they were. If they took, there was a cover of another band who played that earlier. Who was that other band? Does anyone remember? Rolling Stones, very good. You get a prize, and those who couldn't think of it get a prize as well as you go out tonight. So, Rolling Stones back in the 60s, 1965, I think it was, they brought that song out, and Soup Dragon did a cover of it. So there you are, that's how the history of it. Now, last week we touched on the whole issue of freedom, and I shared with you how freedom, in the extensive research I've done of national anthems, freedom was part of the national anthem of New Zealand, United States of America, and as none of us can remember the Australian national anthem, but it is there too, I'm assured, so that might be helpful for you. But what's interesting, what I want to talk to you about tonight is freedom is such an important topic. It's a massive thing. I mean, people were singing, it's in our anthems, it's songs like that were huge. You know, I'm free, I'm free. Does anyone remember Tommy? I'm looking at an old man over there. Yeah. Tommy, the blind guy who pinball wizard. It was all about him becoming free. As he, that was the big mood back in our day, and it's still around for most people. For everybody, there's this passion and desire to be free. I want to actually live a life where I'm not oppressed. I want to have freedom. I want to be young and free. That's what life is about. But here's the thing for tonight. What is real freedom? What does it look like to be really free? And are you free? What kind of freedom are you aspiring? What are you chasing? What kind of freedom do you want? For most people, freedom looks like the Soup Dragon song. For most people, when they think about freedom, they think about it exactly in those terms. Freedom, true freedom, is to be free to do what I want, whenever I want, any old time. So love me, which I'm not quite sure follows, but there you are. But freedom for most people is to be free to do what I want, whenever I want, any old time. That's true freedom. And so it's about being having no constraints. It's about being unfettered. It's about having no inhibitions, nothing holding you back, being able to do what you want, whenever you want, any old time. Now, is that freedom? Don't answer. But is that freedom? One of the big things I want to... We'll step through some big things. The first big thing. That kind of freedom I want to say to you tonight isn't the only kind of freedom there is. You may have been conned into thinking that's all there is. If there's freedom, that's what it is. No. There's another kind of freedom. And in fact, not only is that not the only kind of freedom there is, it's not the best kind of freedom. I'll even go so far as to say it's a fake freedom. It looks like freedom. It presents itself as freedom, but it's not freedom. And in fact, it will actually destroy you and enslave you, which is a great irony. The thing that's presented as freedom, that's sung of as the great freedom, that's sung by people who look free, actually will enslave you. You know, if you're married to a man who aspires to that kind of freedom, if you marry someone whose anthem is, I'm free to do what I want whenever I want, any old time, if you marry that kind of man, it will destroy your marriage. And if you've been fathered by a man who has that as his anthem, I'm free to do what I want any old time, don't constrain me, don't bring any fetters, it will mean you've been left with scars that you'll have to deal with. Now, it isn't always obvious how that kind of freedom is destructive. I want to show it to you in a moment. But I want to do that after I offer you another kind of freedom, a better kind of freedom, a truer kind of freedom, a freedom the Bible talks about. This part of the Bible you've got in a sheet of paper there, please grab it out. I want to show you that passage in a moment. That's the one we want to look at in detail tonight, or at least kind of drift our way through. But just to remind you of the passage that introduces that a little bit further in front of that, if you've got your Bibles, flip up to Galatians. And if you're here tonight and you've not looked much at the Bible, you know, I grew up at a home which wasn't a Christian home. We didn't do anything. We had no Christian faith, and I hadn't read the Bible till I was older. And I was amazed. I was amazed how the Bible was speaking such wisdom. It saw things the way they were, and I want to encourage you, if you've not read the Bible, you'll be surprised once you get into it. Matthew's Gospel, Stu, when he started to read Matthew's Gospel, it's an astonishing thing. But here you have in the book of Galatians, really a description, a discussion about what freedom is. And in chapter 5, verse 1, you now move to this point where the writer says, God giving him these words, he says, it's for freedom that Christ has set us free. Jesus set us free, and he set us free for freedom. Now, if you've not been around church much before, that might be a surprise to you that Christianity is about freedom. But it is. It's about a freedom that's the truest kind of freedom, the most freeing kind of freedom. It's a particular kind of freedom. Now, true freedom, here it is. I'm going to suggest to you, true freedom is the freedom to be what you've been made to be. True freedom is the freedom to be what you've been made to be. I want to unpack that. I've noticed actually that something like it has popped up in contemporary popular thinking. It's come up particularly in around the debate about same-sex marriage and homosexuality. Now, we're not going to talk about that at all tonight. It's a massively important topic. If you want to actually look a little bit further at it and see what something of the Bible has to say about it, we did a series of sessions on it some time ago. It's on the website of EV Church. I think it's under Hot Topics. You can chase it up there. But one of the things I've noticed with the whole homosexuality, same-sex marriage debate is a line that keeps coming out, which says something like this. It says, if a person is born a certain way, then freedom and health is found in living the way they were born to live. If a person's born a certain way, then to be free for them is to have society's kind of inhibitions and pressures taken off them so they can be the way they're born. And that's freedom. Now, is that you hearing that kind of thing around the place too? It has, I think, captured something that's kind of true, but only a quarter truth. You know how you have half a truth, half a lie? It's a quarter truth. It's actually not even, I think, half a truth, but it is something in there. You see, think about this. Is the way a person is born, and I don't mean the mechanics, right? I mean, is the nature a person is born with, the kind of person a person is born when they're born, is that the way they're made to be? Now, that's a deep question. What are you made to be? True freedom is being freed to be what you are made to be. Is the way I'm born, the nature I'm born with, the way I'm meant to be, the way I'm made to be, the way that I'll find my truest freedom if I live the way I'm born to be? Is that where freedom is found? How are we born? Well, that is to say, what is the nature that we are born with? Now, the answer to this comes with a bit of a warning. What I'm about to say is a strangely radical statement. It shouldn't be radical. It never was radical. Well, it has been in various periods of history very radical. At other times, it's not been radical at all. It's been very well understood. But in recent times, it's become quite a radical statement. What are we by nature, the nature of our birth? What are we born to be like? Well, the Bible has a simple answer, and it starts with the letter S. Selfish. Selfish. What is the character of a person when they're born? What are they born to be? They're born to be selfish. That's their nature. I know it's not an attractive idea. You kind of want to wish that a child, when it's born, is born with this naturally inquisitive character who's wonderfully pure and wholesome and good, and it's just polluted and corrupted by the circumstances of life. But no, they're really, and if we can just free them from all of those terrible polluting things, then they'll grow up to be this. No. I'll give you a couple of illustrations. When you have a child, now we're talking to fathers, dads, when you've got your child there, you've got two things about a child. Your child can either be selfish, disrespectful, untidy, thoughtless, rude. Or a child can be thoughtful, respectful, selfless, loving. Now, there's two sides. You could have a child. You could have a child who is selfish, obsessed with themselves, rude, disrespectful. You could have all the other kind. Now, here's the deal, fathers. Which of you spent time teaching the child to be the first? How many of you dads had to teach your kids to, man, look, you've got to stop being so thoughtful. You know, it's going to ruin your life, thinking about other people all the time. You've got to stop being so selfless and just start living for yourself a bit more. How many of you had to teach your kids that? We spend our days having to, and we too, I mean, I'm not, you know, my parents had to spend a lot of time helping me not be thoughtless and rude and disrespectful, and because all of that came naturally. That's what I was by nature. They didn't have to tell me how to do that. They had to tell me how to do the other. They had to teach me and help me and push me and shape me. Here's the thing. The Bible says that the nature we are born with is that we are born to have a nature that is selfish, a nature that's bent in on itself. And it calls that nature. Now look at this passage on your bit of paper there. Look at verse 19, little number 19, about halfway down the page. The acts of the flesh. Now what it uses the word flesh there. That word doesn't just mean physical stuff. It means the nature that I'm born with, the flesh. And it says the acts of the flesh are obvious. And then it spells out for us what the flesh brings out, what kind of comes from within. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. What is a person born desiring? What is a person born with their natural instincts to have? What is it that comes naturally to someone? Well, what the Bible says comes naturally to us is sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, hatred, discord, jealousy. Now, you might read all that list and say, well, look, that's not all me. I don't naturally want to be into witchcraft. Well, no, look, there's some things here that may not strike, but I'll tell you what, you will identify some of these as being exactly where you naturally shift to. It might be fits of rage. It might be that you just can't control your anger. And that's naturally what you do in a situation and you know you ought not. It might be that it's envy and jealousy. You just, whenever you hear about someone else who's doing well and you want to actually pull them down. Now, you don't call it jealousy because that's what keeps happening for you. You just call it, don't want people to get ahead of themselves and think too much of themselves. I'm just speaking the truth, in love. But it's jealousy. It's envy. I want to actually pull other people down. That's by nature what you drift towards. Sexual immorality, dissension, factions, drunkenness. These are the things that by nature we tend towards. No one has to teach us to do them. Now, the evidence for this truth that I'm suggesting to is dead obvious. It's the child. Every child in every country, in every era of history, has been exactly like that. It's not just modern contemporary society. I'll give you another way perhaps to evidence this is, you take a social experiment and you get a bunch of people together and you remove all constraints and you say, look, just do whatever you want, whenever you want, any old time. And you stick them all in a house. What do you come up with? Big Brother. Isn't that right? You just get dissensions and envy and biting, backbiting and jealousies and quarrelling. That's exactly what you get. Do you know, the Bible is exactly right about human nature. That song, Soup Dragon, I'm free to be what I want, whenever I want, any old time, to do what I want, whenever I want, any old time. That song is a celebration of unbridled selfishness. That's what it is. And it has become the anthem of the me generation. And it has produced torrents of pain and grief. You get two people who are bought into that vision of freedom, that true freedom is to be free to do whatever you want, whenever you want, any old time. Two people have that as their anthem of life, to be pursuing that kind of freedom. You get those two people and you get them to marry. You get them now to seek to develop a relationship together. And what happens? How do you think the relationship will go? Well, this is what will happen. This person goes, I'm free to do what I want, and you're inhibiting my freedoms. You're not letting me be who I want to be whenever I want to be, and you need to stop doing that thing. If only you would stop that thing, then I could be what I'm free. And this person responds by going, wow, well, I'm a free person, and you're now inhibiting my freedoms to do what I want, which is I wanted to do this, and you're now, who's going to win? Two people fighting for their freedoms to be whatever they want, whenever they want, in a relationship where their freedoms are actually impinging on each other and stopping each other be. So who's going to win? Well, I'll tell you what happens. In the kind of second best case scenario, what happens, the best case scenario is they actually realise how stupid that kind of freedom is. But the second best case scenario is they go, let's make a compromise. Our relationship matters more than our freedoms. See what's happened? For relationship to function, soup dragon freedom's got to go out the window. You can't live with that kind of freedom as your ultimate ethic and rule anymore because it destroys relationships. But here's what happens often when couples pursue that path. Let's compromise for the sake of relationship. Instead of thinking into the problem of freedom and the way they've understood freedom that they've brought into the whole relationship, they compromise, which ends up breeding bitterness. Because I've had to compromise my freedoms for the sake of this relationship. And so it breeds bitterness and resentment that you've got in the way and I've only had to compromise to actually, but I wish I could, and they grow and chafe and it becomes more and more dysfunctional as the years go on. If we raise kids who think freedom is being free to be what they're born to be, don't be surprised when they live according to the flesh and become enslaved by the flesh. There is a far deeper thing on offer tonight, far better thing on offer tonight. We are made to be something. And true freedom isn't being what you were born to be, but what you were made to be. And that distinction is profoundly important. True freedom is not found in being what you are made, in being what you are born to be. If you are freed to live the way you were born to live, you will end up being verse 19. True freedom is found in being what you're made to be. Well, what are we made to be? We're not in the dark about this. God has told us very clearly what we're made to be. And I think when I say it, many of you will sense it deep within you. There'll be something that resonates. You'll go, oh yeah, that makes sense. What are we made to be? Well, I'll tell you what we're made to be. We're made to be people of love who live lives of humble love, a love that grows out of the relationship we're made to have with God, the God of love. That's what we're made for. To be in relationship with the God of love, who then produces more and more in us an attitude and desire to be people of love. Humble, giving, self-sacrificial. That's what we're made for. We're made for relationships of love that grow from this one great relationship we were made for, the relationship with God, the God of love. And you get that description here in chapter 5, this part of the Bible. If you look there, you'll see it in verse 22. Now, there's mention there of the Spirit, and it's mentioned all the way through this chapter and in this book, actually, in the Bible, of course, too. You'll see it a number of times on the way through there. Have a look there at verse 16. I say, walk by the Spirit. Verse 17, the flesh desires what's contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the flesh. They're in conflict with each other. What the Spirit wants is different to what the flesh wants. Now, what is the Spirit? The Spirit is the person of God. The present power of God in his world is the Spirit of God. Now, that can sound a bit freaky, but if there is a God who has made the world and he's not some man sitting on a cloud somewhere, if he is truly the great God of the universe, he'll be the Spirit who can be with us. And what is that Spirit like? What is God like? Well, verse 22 tells you what he produces, the fruit that comes from the Spirit is love. Let me go them slowly. Love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. What the Spirit of God produces and brings forth is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. What are we made for? We are made to be in relationship with God, the God of love, and be people of love who produce the fruit of what God intends for his world. And you know, if you add all of that together, that fruit of the Spirit, and kind of cast around and go, gee, where have we ever seen that lived out? 2,000 years ago, in Palestine, the God-man Jesus lived that life. The life of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. He came into our world as the most extraordinary man who has ever lived. A man of strength and courage and depth of character, of humility, love, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, of service and wisdom and care and strength. Do you know, so much of what Stuart rings for me, I read the Bible. Mark's gospel was the first gospel I read. It wasn't Matthew, but it was Mark. And I was astonished at meeting this man Jesus. I'd not seen anything like it. And I read about this man Jesus, and he was like a light. You know, moths and lights? I felt like the moth, just too bright. And I was kind of drawn to this Jesus. Yeah, a figure of a towering significance, like no one else. You can't see that character in Jesus and not be drawn to it. And then you compare Jesus to the person who lives the life of Soup Dragon Song. You know, Soup Dragon, free to be what I want, whenever I want, any old time. And Jesus, strength, depth, character, love, joy, peace, patience, self-control, gentleness. You compare those and it's like comparing, you know, it's like comparing the local council park that's overrun with weeds and stunted trees and lantana all shot through it. It's a pale compared to the Amazon rainforest in all its unsullied beautiful glory and greatness. You know, you've got this withered vestige of something that was, and you compare it to the glory of the greatness of the beauty and wonder of Jesus versus living free to do whatever you want, whenever you want, any old time. You know, in all of this, feelings aren't a very good guide. What feels freeing isn't always freeing. Our feelings are not a very good guide to find what's the most freeing life. Let me explain what I mean and give you two examples. Alcoholism. Now, in our church, there are a number of alcoholics who are sober and have been for some years, but they are always alcoholic in that they live with this constant need to control themselves and constrain their behaviour and not give in to urges. And they're forever wanting to drink and having to stop and hold themselves in check. Do you know what feels the most freeing for them? Is to let go and do whatever they want, whenever they want, have another drink. That's what feels freeing. To live otherwise feels constraining and oppressive. But they know that to give in to their feelings of what's most freeing and liberating, to do what feels the freest, will take them down a path of becoming enslaved by their passions again, where they're controlled by their alcoholism, by their need to need another, to need another. And it destroys them. And so their feelings cannot guide them into what's the most freeing life. I'll give you another one, sex. We have lived through a massive social revolution in the last 40 years. And the thinking has been that we've lived through an era of history before then where we were oppressed and constrained in expression of our sexuality and our sexual patterns of behaviour. And if we just let ourselves go, and express our sex whenever we want it, wherever we want it, any old time, we would be freer. And we'd come to a more wonderful, liberated society, which is what's happened, isn't it, friends? What we have rather is a porn-addicted society where young men particularly, but women as well, have found themselves wanting what they feel and giving into their urges, which feels so liberating. And you'd think it would be so mature to live however you want and give whatever and do whatever you want whenever you feel like it. And we of all societies have the capacity now to do that because of the internet. You can pursue whatever interest and desire you want whenever you want, any old time. But what has it created? It's not created a greater liberation of young men. What it's created is an incredible enslavement of young men to pornography, where your whole sexual, your whole view of sex has been shaped and twisted and distorted. Your ability to form intimate relationships with others has become twisted and distorted because freedom is not found down that path. Freedom is not found down the path of doing whatever feels free. Our feelings are not good guides in this. Being free to do whatever you want whenever you're not will not free you. It will enslave you. Enslave you to the worst kind of slave master, your own passions, which are cruel taskmasters. Because by nature and in our flesh, they are corrupted and polluted. And they will drag you down and destroy you. You know, the truest and greatest and most liberating freedom is the freedom to be what you were made to be, which is different from the way you were born to be. When your friends talk about, in particular debates about, you know, people need to be free to be whatever they are born to be, you've got to push back. You've got to help our society see its stupidity and foolishness. You know, I hear the song that says, I can't remember the exact words, but it goes something like this, being true to yourself is the most honourable path in life. You think about that. Being true to yourself. That's wonderful if what you are in yourself is noble, righteous, good. But what if what you are in yourself is basically corrupted and selfish? If it is the flesh that what is yourself, then to be true to that will destroy us all and take you down with it. What are we made to be? It's not what we were born to be. What we're made to be is to live a life of love that grows out of knowing God, the God of love, being connected with Him. That is where freedom is found. Now, this book, it's a wonderful book. And if you've been with us over the last bunch of weeks, you'll see that it's moved in a series of steps to this freedom. And as we come now in chapter 5, this last part, we're unpacking what that freedom now looks like in our experience. But I'm conscious that some of you may not have been with us over the last weeks, and so I want to give you a little bit of a backtrack in that. What's the first step? You see, there's a couple of steps to this great freedom that God has for us. What's the first step in that freedom? Well, the first step is the freedom of coming to know God. How do I get to have a relationship with God? Well, that is the whole point of this book. It's the freedom that Christ has set me free to experience and know and enjoy. Freedom to be what we're made to be is free to be in relationship with this God. How do I get that relationship with God? Well, I tell you, religions will give you all kinds of answers. And if you sum up religion's answers, all the religions of the world, if you sum them up, I've said this a number of times, keep banging away, and if you sum up all the religions of the world and the answers they give, it's basically this: if you do these series of things, you'll get there. God, or whoever is the divine being, will one day accept you if you're good enough. If you earn your way, if you perform enough rituals, that kind of way to get to God will be oppressive. You'll constantly be crushed by the demands of a law that you can't keep. You'll either begin to fool yourself into thinking you are keeping and you'll become proud and look down your nose at everybody else, or you'll fail it all the time as you will and become despairing. It'll destroy you, thinking that I've got to earn my way to God. And if you're not in church, what you'll do is you'll look at people in church and think that's what they're all like. They're all sitting there thinking about how good they are and they're looking down their noses at us. That's not what biblical Christianity is. Biblical Christianity is radically different. What it says is that God has done something to free us to have a relationship with Himself that doesn't actually rely on my performance at all. It relies on me acknowledging I can't perform. It relies on me realizing I can't bring anything to God. I can only come with empty hands. It relies on me humbling myself and realizing the key to being free to have a relationship with God is what He has done for me. And what He's done for me is extraordinary. He has given His only Son. The Father of the universe has given up His precious only Son to die, so that by His death He might take upon Himself the curse that's due to me, the debt that I owe, He might pay it for me. He might live the life that I ought to have lived that I couldn't live. God has given His own Son to do that for me, so that anyone who in humility comes to Jesus and says, "Let your life stand for mine. Let me entrust myself to you and what you've done for me," will be set free and brought into a relationship, adopted as sons and daughters of God the Father. Not based on your own merits and goodness, but based on the merits and goodness of Jesus another. That's what it is to be set free in this first step, to come into relationship with the God of love. He bears the curse so I don't have to. He's crucified and takes the condemnation that I deserve. Now, all of that about Christianity is profoundly different from the way most people think about it. You ask anyone in the street what is a Christian, and they'll say someone who's trying to do good enough to get to heaven. The Bible says something profoundly different. If you've thought the popular idea, then please can I urge you to actually look at the Bible yourself and find out that something's far more wonderful than you'd ever imagined. There's a God who loves us so much that He's actually sent His Son to die for us, that whoever believes in Him shall not perish, but have eternal life and be set free. Now that's so radical a message that you might conclude that if I can get accepted by God by what He has done and not by my efforts, why bother making any effort? If it's all because God's done it and not me, why do I have to do anything? Why don't I now live doing whatever I want, whenever I want, any old time? Because I've got to get out of jail card free. I mean, He can just forgive me whenever I come back. And now the logic seems pretty inescapable and it's pretty powerful. It actually it reminds me of a situation we had some years ago with a video store. Do you remember those things, video stores? Who of you still goes to video stores? Okay, a bunch of them. All right, there you go. Let me tell you about a video store. A couple of years ago, we go to the video store. We got Big Pond and all that kind of stuff. But you go to the video store and you'd get a video and you'd forget about it and it would end up under a couch somewhere, yeah? And you'd go for weeks, months with this thing lost, and eventually, it was never me who did it, but someone would put it there and it would be left there. And I would, when I was vacuuming, I would eventually find this DVD and desperate to have a movie. You know, I really need to watch a movie. So I'd go to the video store and I'd say, "Oh, look, I've just found this video. How long overdue is it?" "Oh, 4 months." "How much do I owe you?" "How much is your house worth?" Do you know, it's kind of like this massive amount of money, hundreds of dollars. And here's what I did. Because I really needed a movie, I said, "Oh man, I'm so sorry. I've done the wrong thing. I've got no excuses. I lost the video and I should have chased it and it's all my fault. Can you please forgive me? Can you wipe the debt out so that I can come back into relationship with you and borrow videos again from you and be on your good books?" And so I did that whole thing and I was good at it. And I did this whole thing. And you know what they said behind the counter? They said, "All right." Yeah. They wiped the debt out and let me start again, and I started borrowing videos again. Now, as soon as you hear that story, you know what your flesh is doing? I know what you're thinking, because you're all flesh people. I know what you think. You're thinking, what are you thinking? Where's that video store? Because here's the deal. Once you realize that a video store can, you can just go and say, "You're sorry, own your mistake, please forgive me, can you pay my debt?" And they do, you think to yourself, awesome, that's a video store I want to go to because I can now borrow videos with Evan without ever having to take them back on time because they just wipe out the debts. Do you see, if you have that kind of situation, you go, why bother then doing anything on time? Why bother ever bringing your video back on because I just wipe it out? Do you see how the logic follows? With God, if I can come to God and say, look, Lord, I'm so sorry. I've lived a way that's dishonouring to you, but you've paid a price so that I don't have to. Please forgive me. And he says, oh, welcome back. Free. You think to yourself, well, good, I'll just keep doing what I want. Why would I live any differently? That logic seems to be profoundly inescapable. And it's exactly what the Apostle Paul realises you might be thinking. And so he says there in chapter 5, look at verse 13, the beginning of this section. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. But do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. Don't use your freedom to indulge and do whatever you want whenever you want. Why? Verse 14. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this one commandment, love your neighbour as yourself. That is to say, what he's saying is that, yes, the law is not a means to earn your favour with God and climb the rungs of the Ten Commandments to maybe make it one day. That's true. It's by faith in Jesus and what he's done for me alone that brings me salvation. But what the law does is reveal the will of God, which is that I be a person of love. That's what he wants for me because that's what he made me for. That's why he brings me back to a relationship with himself, that I might be someone of love. So don't indulge the flesh. Don't give into it. Rather serve one another humbly in love. Now you might hear all of that and you go, well, that just sounds like a bunch of new rules. I've just got to do a whole bunch of stuff now. That sounds just as bad. No, there's two reasons why it's not bad. Let me give you to them. The first one is this. Remember constantly that rule-keeping is not the way I earn the way back to God. It's by the work of Jesus and the work of Jesus alone. He's paid the debt, I'm free. He's paid the debt, I'm free. Free from guilt, free from condemnation, free from condemnation past, present and future, I'm free. The debt has been paid, not because I've done enough, but because he did it all. Remember that. But the second thing is this. The way God has paid the debt changes us. The way God has paid the debt changes us, or it changes everybody who accepts that payment, who steps into trusting Jesus. You are changed in two ways. You're changed, look at 5:24. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. Something has happened to you, friends, if you have put your trust in Jesus and come to Jesus. And if you're looking on the outside wondering why it is that anyone would live differently, it's because they've been changed when they came to Jesus. Your natural born nature has been crucified, the nature that only wants to live for yourself has been crucified. You're different. And I'll tell you what, there's another difference that's happened to you, and that is the difference of, let's pick it up there, the mention of the Spirit, verse 16. You come down there in verse 26, since we live by the Spirit. A second thing's happened in that God has crucified my flesh in Jesus, and he has given me his powerful presence, the Spirit, to dwell with me, that I'm now got God in me, wanting something different. And what does God want? What he wants in me is to be a person of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, selfishness. He wants that. And so two things have happened to me. I've had my flesh changed, and I've now had the Spirit of God dwell in me, and I now have this new power at work which changes us, changes me from the inside. You know, many years ago, there used to be street preachers in Sydney, and this is decades ago, there was a communist street preacher who'd set up on one corner and he was spruiking communism and how wonderful it was. On the opposite corner, a Christian had set up and was proclaiming Jesus and telling people about the gospel and so on. The communist said, he was trying to explain how great communism was, and he saw a drunk guy who was all kind of beaten and battered and dressed in rags. And he made a comment to the crowd. He said, "See that drunk there?" He said, "Communism will put a new suit on that man." Krishna across the road, quick as a flash, said, "Jesus will put a new man in the suit." Now that's a nice line. And it comes straight from the Bible. If you come to Jesus, you are freed from the debt you owe God. He's paid it for you. And the way he's paid the debt changes you from the inside. Your flesh has been crucified. Its power to control you has gone. It's still there because it's dead and you carry around this body of death. It is still there, but it's crucified in its power to control you. You're different. And if you're looking on the outside going, why would you live any differently? Because Christians have been made differently now. So much so that, verse 18, they are led by the Spirit. Just bear with me as I unpack that sentence and then I'll pull it all together. It's interesting that he says, if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under law. What does that mean? Well, what's being said is that to be under law is to be under condemnation and curse, trying to make my way to God, never being able to do it. But if I'm led by the Spirit, then I've been freed from that and I'm in relationship with God. Which begs the question, what is it to be led by the Spirit? Because if you are led by the Spirit, then you know that you've been freed. One of the evidences you've been freed is that you're led by the Spirit. Well, how do I know if I'm led by the Spirit? Because that's a critical question to ask. If you're not led by the Spirit, you're still under law. How do I know if I'm led by the Spirit? Well, that language has been abused in all kinds of ways in recent times, so that you might think to yourself, to be led by the Spirit is to have someone who has visions and dreams from God who tells them what to do all the time. I've never had that. Am I led by the Spirit? No, no, no. In context, what is it to be led by the Spirit? It's to be led into, verse 22, producing the fruit of the Spirit. To be walking, verse 16, by the Spirit is to be someone who's not gratifying the desires of the flesh. To be walking with the Spirit, to have the Spirit leading me, is to be someone who's led into not going the path of the way I was born, but going the path the way I was made to be. And so, verse 13, not using my freedom to indulge the flesh, but rather serve one another humbly in love. Now, I'm just talking right now to those of you who are Christians. If you claim to be a Christian, to be one who's had your debt paid by Jesus and his death on the cross for you, then you will necessarily be different than you were before. And the invincible, indisputable evidence that you are different is that you will now want different things. You will want to put to death the flesh and walk with the Spirit and produce the life of humbly serving others in love. You want to have that happen. If that's not evidenced in your life, it can only be because you have not actually come to Christ yet and you're still under law, and we need to talk more. Because what you need is not more rules, you need the gospel, the message of Jesus. You know, the glory of Jesus Christianity, not churchianity. Churchianity is all about rules and pride and despair and oppression. Jesusanity, Christianity, is about forgiveness and a fresh start and a new person, where the old is gone, the new has come, where I've been crucified with Christ and no longer live, but the life I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I've been transformed. The old nature's dead, still there, tripping me up, but dead. And the Spirit of God is now dwelling with me to change me, to live me. So, the new life is necessarily part of who we are. You can't live otherwise. Now, tonight, I want to give you a choice. I want to invite you to choose freedom. And I want to invite you to choose the right kind of freedom. You can choose the soup dragon freedom, the freedom that feels freeing, the freedom of doing whatever you want, whenever you want, any old time. You can choose that freedom tonight, and it will be easy. It'll be the easy path to go. It'll be the broad path to go. And many are on it, but they're on it to destruction. You won't feel that it'll lead you to destruction yet. It just feels cool at the moment. But in 20 years' time, if we meet again, you will see the disaster that it wreaks in your life. It's an easy way to go. It naturally feels like true freedom because it's playing to my nature, the flesh. But I want to offer you a second kind of freedom tonight, a far more wonderful kind of freedom, a truly liberating freedom, a freedom to be what you're made to be in relationship with the God of love, producing love. Now, that kind of freedom is easy, hard, easy. It's easy, hard, easy. It's easy because God has done the work. He has forgiven you. He is remaking you. He has given you himself to live with you. He's done it all. It's easy to come this way. Put your trust in Jesus. Let him do the work for you. It's easy to come this kind of freedom. But it's hard because, verse 16, you have to walk by the Spirit. Verse 25, you have to keep in step with the Spirit. Verse 13, you have to not indulge the flesh, but serve humbly in love. It's hard because you've got to walk with what the Spirit wants and not just be passive. You've got to fight against the flesh and not indulge the flesh. Keep saying no to your nature and live the way God would have you live according to the Spirit. That's hard work. It takes discipline. But it's easy because the Spirit now empowers me to do it. You're not on your own, Christian. You've got God dwelling with you to enable you to live this kind of freedom. So tonight, if you're here and you're exploring these things, please can I urge you to think, to not drift with what's easy, to not go with what feels freeing, but actually think about where true freedom is found. And appreciate that true freedom is found in relationship with Jesus, that you were made to have, living a life of love that we were made for. That life is truly liberating. Come and find it. It's easy, hard, easy.